Welcome to the Before Midnight podcast, coming to you from the N+1 studios overlooking beautiful downtown Frankfurt. In this podcast, we explore the world of endurance multisport. If it has to do with swimming, biking, running, or any combination of the three, we're there. This week, we're going to talk about training in the winter and why Brian doesn't pick spring races. There's good reasons for that, apparently. I'm your host, Linda Word, along with my co-host, Brian Schenkenfelder. How are you today, Brian? Haven't seen you in a while, or at least we haven't been in this position for a couple weeks.
I'm phenomenal. I'm ready. Do I sound phenomenal? I don't really sound to do it.
Yeah, you don't sound phenomenal.
That's okay. I am. I'm just holding it back so that I don't just get too excited too early and peter out later.
Going to burst out in song or something in the middle of our podcast.
I'm going to try to build throughout and by the end be just fire.
Sounds like
fire.
One of the swim things that you get.
That's right. We're descending this set of...
4x100s, descending. Build within.
Oh, 100's fast. That's good stuff, man. That's good stuff. So we did Thursday. We did 100 fast at the end of practice.
I miss swimming glorious. During the week.
It's glorious. I'm getting faster in the pool, though.
Good.
I'm getting back to where I left off. I was actually able to hold the feet of the faster women on our swim team, which was
cool.
A good set for me.
Yeah,
it's going well. The field, it's been interesting, the journey from not being able to swim to not being fast but not being slow either. I find it really difficult to explain that process. There's the technical aspect of getting your hands in the right spot, learning the pull, learning the motion, and that takes a long time.
Tell me about it.
And to be able to repeat that regularly takes a long time. I've been swimming now for, 10, 11 years? And it took a long time to get to the point where that was right. Then there's a timing aspect to swimming that I've only been able to execute successfully here in the last year or two, of the coupling of motions between the extension and back end of your pull.
Mm-hmm.
The final element of it is a feel for the water that I can't explain. That was one of the things that I've always wanted to be able to do as a coach, is understand what that feeling is like and being able to explain it to someone else, mainly because it was something that has been developed as an adult. I have a sense of what I'm trying to understand. Mm-hmm. Kids don't get it. They're just learning to swim. They get it. It move on. They don't put the pieces together. I've been trying, as I journey through this, to put those pieces together to understand the feel of the water in such a way that it can be explained. And I'm not sure I could explain it.
There's elements, that you can explain and explain and explain, and until everything clicks with somebody, they're not going to get it.
Right. I get that from the...
And it can be years. I mean...
It does take a long time to develop the muscle movements, but once you gain those muscle movements, there's something else. There's a timing aspect of it that is challenging. Most people fire too early in the stroke, where it really is more of the back end of the stroke, the back of the stroke where most of your power is generated. People tend to really pull at the front end of their stroke way too hard. That's one element of it. At the same time, there is a feel element. Nowadays, I can actually feel myself pushing against the water. Now I understand what slipping feels like and kind of what grabbing the water feels like. I'm not sure I could explain that to a person in a way that they could understand what I'm talking about and themselves feel that.
I understand what you're saying. Yeah. It's I took riding lessons for a long, long time, and my instructor would tell me things and tell me things and tell me things, and I'm clueless. And then all of a sudden, 2 years later, and possibly with a different horse, or, it's like, oh, now I get it. Okay, now I can transfer that to another horse or something. But it's one of those, you can talk until you're blue in the face, but until it just happens.
Well, there's two elements of that.
There's skills and stuff beforehand, of course.
There's two elements to that. There's the element of you're not ready to take the information that's being given to you at that time because you don't have an understanding of everything else to make to be able to apply that knowledge. The second part of that though is trying to put into words a sensation.
Right.
that is where I struggle to be able to do. I thought going through it and beginning to understand how that is and what those feelings are, maybe you can pass that on. I do understand the importance of sculling and trying to understand that feeling. The problem is most people aren't going to scull that way. If you watch people scull in the pool, they're trying to get down the lane as fast as possible. So they move their hands very fast. Mm-hmm. My understanding of the feel has kind of come from sitting at the end of the lane and just trying to scoop water and see how much water I can get kind of to the surface, or how much water I can feel pushing against as I move it down against my body, mm-hmm. and trying to get that feel for generating water and how slow I can move to how fast I can move, and understand those sensations on my hand while I'm sitting at the end of the pool. And you can then take that and move that into sculling. The problem with that level of sculling is the length of time it takes you to go from one end of the pool to the other. When you put that into a practice where people are racing every set, that value of the scull really isn't there. And why a lot of times I'll do some sculling, but we don't do a ton of it because it's not done well in such a way that's helpful for the swimmer.
Yeah. Well, and the stuff that you're talking about, like, kids just do it naturally. They play in the water. They figure out how it works and how to move their bodies when they're kids.
Well, and they're also swimming 10 hours a week.
Yeah.
Every week. They're swimming 10 hours a week every week for forever.
Yeah.
That's the reason they get it. They learn easier than adults. Therefore, they're going to make the adaptations and they're going to learn the muscle movements a lot faster than adults. That's why they ramp up so much faster. And since they have no expectations of what things are supposed to feel like, they can adapt and learn mm-hmm. that feel of the water just from swimming all the time and trying to get faster all the time.
Yeah.
Adults, I don't think it's as easy for adults to go that route.
You know, to them, it's play. You know, I mean, swim practice. I know my girls, you know, relaxing times before and after practice. It's like, you know, I mean, Jillian's favorite thing to do is do somersault and flip turn like it's nobody's business, you know, at almost 6 foot tall.
Yeah.
Just because she likes to do that. You know, and it was just fun. Meanwhile, her mother, you know, can't do a flip turn to save her life. Just different. Yeah, it's tough. And trying to explain, I mean, that's part of learning how to be a coach and being an instructor. It's just how to make the words so that somebody else can understand it and do the skill.
Again, I don't think there's a way for people to grasp. I don't think there's a good way to explain sensations. I just don't think there is. I can talk about slipping and what that might feel like if you feel the water kind of rushing along the side of your fingers around the outside of your hand, you're probably slipping in the water.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that. You shouldn't feel water rushing around the outsides of your fingers, like around your pinky, your forefinger, thumb, when you're pulling. If you feel the water rushing around the outside edge, mm-hmm. you're slipping in the water.
Okay.
That's one I can't explain. Now, to be able to swim in such a way where you don't have that sensation is where it gets a little more challenging. That's where sculling, I think, can come in handy. Because with sculling, I can sit there and play with the water, and I can feel that slippage mm-hmm. and try to control that so it doesn't happen. Might be a good way to learn that feel for the water for people. That's the only way I can explain
it. So what should it feel like if you're not feeling the water?
It would feel like constant pressure along your palm and all those fingers. You shouldn't feel it on the outside edges.
Okay. I'll have to try that. I'll have to think about that.
That's what it is. At least for me, that's kind of what I feel. It's a constant pressure on your hand, but you don't feel it going around the outside. If you pull real fast, you'll feel, and you're paying attention, you can feel that water going along the edges of your fingers.
Of your fingers. Interesting.
On your hand.
Okay. I'll have to play around with that. I've never really thought about it, and I've got so many other issues with swimming right now anyway. Interesting. Okay. Well, we got totally off topic. So how was your Thanksgiving?
It was good. We really didn't do much that week. Her dad was kind of out of, I don't know what they did. They were out of town, I believe, at his wife's family.
Okay.
We went to my parents, saw my sister, got hurt in a big wheel accident.
That's right. I forgot about the big wheel accident. Oh my gosh. How old are you? 10?
I'm 11 now.
Oh, yay.
We were riding the big, as my son was riding the big wheel down the hill going real fast. Uh-huh. I was trying to convince him to go around the corner and get it to spin out and actually drift.
Okay.
And he wouldn't do it. He wouldn't stand on it. He thought it was too dangerous.
Smart kid.
Well, and I'm trying.
Some,
and I'm
some
like,
self-preservation there.
That was in speed. I wasn't going to go at high speed. So okay. I get on it, and I'm just in the driveway doing it, not going very fast. And I'm trying to get it to turn out. I guess I weigh too much. It wouldn't actually spin out. As a kid, those things would be...
It's designed for an 8-year-old, so, you know.
But it was like sticking to the ground.
Okay.
And I was going, you know, 5, 6, 7, 10 miles an hour, and I would turn it hard, and I would just turn. It wouldn't slide. What I tried to do was use my legs to kind of, since I was standing on it, to kind of push it off to the side and try to force that spin out.
How were you standing on a big, so you were like standing, like squatting on the seat?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I was squatting on the seat. God. I try to use my legs to kind of push it out to get it to spin. Mm-hmm. And what happened instead was I got too far back and the front wheel came up.
Okay.
And my foot came off the back and got turned sideways and I just rolled my ankle. But I had to lay there in the ground. They thought I'd died, that I'd hit my head or something. I'm like, no, I just turned my ankle. I'm laying here because it hurts. And I'm going to let it not hurt, and then I'll stand up. Which, and turning your ankle is the worst because it doesn't affect running. It doesn't affect biking. But dang it if it doesn't affect swimming.
Yeah, when you don't know how to.
The kicking just is annoying because it hurts.
Is it better now or does it still hurt?
Oh, no. It hurt for a 1 or 2 swim sessions. It really didn't hurt that much, but it was annoying enough that I couldn't really kick hard.
I think you're the only grown man that I personally know big wheel.
Well, the funny thing was, I think that was my left ankle. We're playing soccer. No, that's my right ankle, because we're playing soccer like 2 or 3 days later, and I turned my left ankle at the end of soccer.
Matching set. Awesome.
So I had a matching set of,
wow,
ankle sprains. Fortunately, they were not severe strains. They were very minor.
That's
they were fine within a day or two. Mm-hmm. It was just one of those things where...
Oh, my God. We had it was just us for Thanksgiving and the girls, and then we did the boyfriend dinner on Saturday, and my husband has not done one of these in a long time. He's the cook. I really squat. I mean, I can. I just don't play. And he did a low country boil out in the front yard. Corn and sausage, potato, tons and tons of shrimp. And my daughter's boyfriend, who's like 24 years old, has never had a shrimp. So we teach this child how to eat shrimp because he was going to put the whole thing in his mouth and it wasn't peeled. I'm like, whoa, 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 hold on. See those little leg things? Yeah, pull those off.
How do you get shrimp with the legs and stuff on it? Don't you like buy it already?
No, he veined bought, and all that? Like they're gray. He bought 6 pounds of jumbo shrimp from the seafood place at Kroger.
Oh. That we always buy it with all everything deveined and everything.
No.
You just cook it.
No. These were fresh shrimp. And he didn't mean to buy the spicy sausage. Normally he does the seasoning comes like in a bag and you put it in the pot. It seasons everything. Well, he couldn't find that. So he had to just dump the seasoning in. Oh my God, I've never had such spicy corn in my life because it just like absorbs everything. You got to cook the corn the longest.
Right.
Like, whoa. All right. That was... counteract the spices, but
I bet really that ended fun. Well
yeah, I mean, you know, everybody it was fun. I hadn't seen my youngest daughter's since senior prom, so it's been 4 years since they just started dating again recently. It was neat to talk to him. His dad is a drone operator, Department of Water. So that,
the yeah. Department of Water has a drone operator.
Yeah.
Okay.
It goes to different spots, I guess. I think it has to do with looking at bodies of water, filming.
Yeah.
Observing. I mean, there's a lot of places you can't get to, more difficult to hike to. I mean, my husband used to do water testing, and some of the places he had to just crazy deal.
I figured that's what boats and like helicopters and planes were for.
Yeah, well, a drone can get into much smaller places.
Okay.
I don't know. So, but it was cool. So
I
that
didn't
was
know there'd be places. That much drone work for bodies of water.
Well, I mean, I think okay. He's like probably the only one that does it in the state of Kentucky. It's a pretty big state, so I don't think there's a whole lot of people that need to do. He's been doing it for years.
Okay.
Yeah. Kind of cool. I don't know too many drones.
No.
Anyway, so that was good. And you know,
need to get him for your races. Come and do drones for races.
That would be filming for the races. There's a lot of the Rock and Desert Renfro Valley race that they always have to do a little movie every year.
Yeah, you can get some neat overhead views of stuff.
Yeah. I've got a friend out in Montana who, oh my God, some of the film, gorgeous. All right, well, we'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, 3 Sport Endurance Coaching. 3SE is committed to their athletes and designs personalized training plans for runners, triathletes, duathletes, and aquabike competitors. We work with athletes that are just getting started, those that have maybe been out of the sport for a little while, and those that want to up their game and compete at a higher level. If you're looking for a coach, check at go3sport.com. All right, I like training in the winter, not like days like where it's raining, disgusting.
Which is almost all of winter, but
I know, that's like the bad turkey. Like, I hate running and I cannot stand it. I can put on more clothes if there's only so much I can take off without. You know, and once you get hot, you can't, I mean, to try to cool down is just super hard to do. And ugh, I would much, much rather run in the wintertime, get hot, take my hat off, get cooled down, put my hat back on and keep on going instead of getting hot and just have to stop.
Or you run and your water bottle gets frozen and you can't drink water anymore.
That's what your hands are for. My hands are warm enough. I've never had a water bottle.
Well, I've had multiple ones.
You're just like icy cold.
I used to train in the winter and I remember that. You put the water bottles on your belt and within about 15 minutes, frozen. Frozen solid.
Yeah, make a pit stop at the BP station and carry $5 with you.
So when you're in the middle of nowhere, running.
Well, you know, you plan these things.
This is when I was out in Wadi. I was out, in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. So you had to carry everything with you out and back, and my bottles of water would freeze. It was hilarious. They were at some point, you just didn't take water on your runs. You just would go.
What I would do in that situation, if I had a super long run, is I'd have a little cooler so that they wouldn't freeze. That's ahead of time. I wouldn't have to have done that plenty of times, just in any time.
But yeah, I've never done it. That takes way too much time and effort.
You train by yourself. I train with groups. We have people that go, okay, I'll do this and I'll do this. And it's a group effort for a 20-mile.
Yeah. No, this is a topic that was inspired by me getting out on the rollers. Get my rollers out. Ooh. And having to ride on the rollers again, which I did clipped in, which is fun. Rollers are always a fun adventure.
You haven't been on those in a year.
Mm-hmm. No, not since last winter. I get them out in the winter, mainly for when I have a day like today where it rains. I want to get a bike ride in, usually, or I can't get one during the day. It allows me to ride in the evening because it gets dark at like 4 p.m.
Yeah.
You really can't go out and bike in the winter before like 3:30. Or after 3:30 if you want to ride for more than an hour.
If you want to ride for
at least an hour. If you want to ride for an hour, hour and 15 minutes.
Sunset's...
What, 5 something now?
5 o'clock now. 2 weeks ago, and it was like 60 degrees, and I had a nice, nice ride. But yeah, it got dark on me. I was like 5:45.
Yeah, it's like 5:15 right now, sunset. Yeah, but you have to be out by 2 o'clock if you want to get a bike ride in. Otherwise, you have to resort to things like rollers or trainers or things like that.
Yeah.
And that's what kind of inspired this. I was also talking to some athletes about racing. They wanted to race in the spring and things of that nature. I guess since they didn't race this year, they're antsy to get out and race.
Mm-hmm.
And I started thinking about what does that mean to train in the winter. And I realized that, especially in a sport like triathlon, cold weather training is miserable. If you live in Florida, you can train year-round, I think, fairly effectively. But once you start heading north of Tennessee... Mm-hmm. It becomes a lot more challenging.
Well, even Tennessee, it gets snow pretty cold.
It can get cold. That's true. I'm thinking more like southern Tennessee, like the Chattanooga area or something like that, where you're getting a little bit closer to Georgia in the southern states. Or if you're in the southwest, where it's warm all the time, San Diego, Arizona, those states are probably in Texas. Well, Texas can get cold in the winter. I know that.
Now, who actually has races, triathlons in the spring? Are they all down...
Usually they're in the south, like Texas or Florida. Chattanooga, I think, has one in May, which I consider a spring race, although technically that might be, I guess that's the end of spring. You're getting into summer at that point. But May races can be really cold. I think the average water temperature for that race is like 72.
Yikes.
Which is...
Wetsuit legal.
Wetsuit legal, yes. That's where it starts getting really cold for me. When you get in the low 70s, I have a hard time swimming in 60s. I just do. It causes me breathing problems, and I get cold.
What's the coldest water you've ever swam in?
It was a May race at Taylorsville Lake, and that was the coldest water. I remember getting in and just shivering, and I stayed in the water because I knew it would be a problem to get out and try to get back in.
Yeah.
I stayed in there. I remember them doing the pre-race talk, and I was just shivering. We were just kind of like huddled together in the water me and a couple other people just shivering.
I don't know you, but body heat.
Yeah. Like one girl came over like right next to me. Weird, weird, weird event.
Okay.
All good. It was just cold. And I remember going off and swimming, and about 15, 20 yards into it, I still couldn't breathe.
Yikes.
I ended up doing backstroke the whole time.
I don't think I've been in water temp below 7. Well, I take that back. When I first got my wetsuit, when is Mother's Day?
That's in May.
May. I got my wetsuit like right around Mother's Day, and I went down to Kentucky. That was pretty, I want to say it was probably about 70.
If you can breathe, it's not too bad. But once it gets to the point where you can't breathe, it's miserable.
Yeah.
Your hands just get so cold. Your feet get so cold. There's nothing you can do either.
Yeah.
In cold water, it's not like you're going to warm up.
I mean, there's
up.
Like full suits with gloves and booties. And
most of that's for diving, yeah. Not necessarily for swimming. There are things you can do to try to stay warm to do cold water swimming. But that's, again, one of your problems with, if I'm trying to do a race in March and April, the water might be 72, may race 72. But now let's back this up and let's think about training.
Right.
When am I going to even be able to get in the water to do any open water practice?
Yeah. Yeah.
April? Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah. Going to get in two or three times, maybe, if you're lucky.
Swimming becomes the hardest thing to replicate and get ready for, especially if you want to make that an important race. A lot of people will try to make an important race in the spring and then maybe one later in the summer, early fall. I did this before. I remember trying to get ready for a race in April. It was a half in Charleston, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
The race itself was fairly warm. Actually, it was a cold day for Charleston. I remember that race from the standpoint of we got down there a couple days earlier and it was like 80 and just absolutely beautiful. And then race day was like a high of maybe 70.
Ooh, whoops.
It was in the low 70s. And it was just so cold. It wasn't, you make it through, but the run, I remember getting cold towards the end of that run. And then when I finished, just sitting at the finish line and just shivering.
Was it a half?
Because I was so cold. It was a half, yeah.
Okay.
So it was an iron. That was the race where my goggles broke.
Yeah, you had a lot of horrible.
And then I went out too fast on the run and just struggled the last 2 or 3 miles. And then I was just cold when it was over. Couldn't warm up because it was just, it was cold that day.
It was cold.
There was no way to warm up after the race. Yikes. And that was, but most of those things come from that of what are the challenges of if I want to do a spring race that I need to overcome.
Mm-hmm.
One is you can't do open water swims.
Yeah.
You're just going to have to use the pool as your resource, use your experience in the sport. If you're new to triathlon, you've never done an open water swim, I'd probably avoid that.
Good luck.
I push that race a little bit later in the year.
Yeah.
If you've been swimming in open water before, if you've been doing triathlons for numbers of years, pool is going to be adequate for that. You're not going to be great at sighting. There's going to take a little bit of adaptation. But
yeah, I mean, you can practice.
You can make it your way through it.
Yeah.
And you muddle your way through the swim. Yeah. It's just different having to swim for an extended period of time in one spot. The only thing you can do in a pool to even replicate that is to get some type of, usually a bungee that you can get around your waist where you can swim in one spot.
Find a friend with an endless pool.
Or you can find a friend with an endless pool would be your other way. There's just very limited options to get used to that swimming and sighting and those skills. You can't work on those in a pool. Not well, at least. You can do some sighting stuff, but it's not the same. It's not even close to the same.
Yeah.
You can't really replicate some of the other elements of open water, like waves and stuff like that, in a pool very easily.
Mm-hmm.
So there's challenges in swimming for an early season race.
Mm-hmm.
You're a runner. Running is probably the easiest thing to be able to do in the winter.
Yes.
There are challenges to that, I think. I think if you're running at night, things like water freezing, that's a very real thing in the winter when you're running and it's 25 degrees outside.
Mm-hmm. Well,
when I was training for that spring race, I'd have to go out at 6, 7, 8 o'clock at night and run, and it got cold. I remember my buff being frozen, had this layer of ice on my buff, and I remember all my water bottles being frozen. At some point, I just stopped taking water out when I ran in the winter.
You know, if I'm going for more than an hour,
I needed to make sure I had lights on too, because it's nighttime.
Yeah.
In the summer, I would always run. If I ran at 7 o'clock, the sun would be low in the sky. It'd be cooler. but it wouldn't be dark. People could still see you. At night, you got to have lights.
90% of my runs, the only time I don't run when it's dark is on a Saturday or a Sunday. Every other run I do is going to be in the dark, no matter what time of year it is. I mean, I'm running at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
So I'm used to having to put on all the lights and having a flashlight or whatever. You know, it doesn't matter.
But if you're not used to that, now all of a sudden that's extra things you're going to have to buy. Yeah. That's extra things you're going to have to get ready. And this gets to the one thing that people undervalue, and that's the amount of time it takes to get ready to go out and run and bike in the winter. It takes extra time. It's even if it's 5, 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, you have to go find your light vest, put it on, put the 3 or 4 layers on, all that stuff. Takes a lot more time. It takes a lot more time on the bike.
Yeah.
For me, at least, to put on all these different layers, to get your insulated boots and things like that on, to get ready to bike. It takes a while.
I mean, there's a whole lot more thought involved, and I still struggle with the bike when it's at all cold because I'm just not used to it. I'm used to, okay, I look at the temperature. If I'm going for a run, I dress like it's 20 degrees warmer. Okay, I got that. I can do that pretty easily. I've been doing it long enough. I've got a closet full of whatever. Pick this, 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 and this. And I know my body. I know what gets cold. I know what doesn't. You know, it's not that big a deal. But with a bike, it's like, wait, okay, 20 degrees warmer? No, that doesn't work because there's wind involved.
Right.
And, you know, there's a whole lot more aspects that I'm still
yeah, you learn to what you can wear at different temperatures, and it's not like a rule like running. And the other thing I found is that when I get done with these, it takes me a while to warm back up because my body temperature will drop whenever I do this. And that's things, so I can't just like come back and immediately go out and go somewhere quickly. It's going to take me a little bit to warm up before I can go do another activity. Yeah. There's actual time involved in those types of things. We're in the summer, you know, I throw a kit on, throw some shoes on, I'm out the door on a bike, I get back, I'm sweating, I jump in the shower. By the time I'm done with the shower, I've cooled off, I'm ready to go do something else.
Mm-hmm.
That isn't what happens in the winter when I train. It takes me a while to warm back up and become functioning after some of these cold efforts.
My challenge with running in the wintertime is actually getting hot and then getting done with a run, and you know, you're hot and you're sweaty and you're still all bundled up, and then all of a sudden it's just like a
it
light
can get
switch
cold
you
real
get
quick.
Cold. It's like, okay, yes. Time to go. Got to get in the car. Where's, you know, find a dry shirt, change real quick or whatever so that I freeze to death.
So, but that just becomes something else. If you're a time constrained athlete, I'm trying to train 12 hours a week or 13, 14 hours a week. Well, now I really got to add another hour in there or two for just changing and dressing and things and stuff that you don't have in the summertime.
Yeah.
At least in that type of level.
Mm-hmm.
Something else to kind of think about as you're going to it. And biking is probably the most challenging. You'll see a lot of people like, well, I just throw my bike on a trainer. I'll throw it on rollers and get the same workout. I thought that too in the first couple of years. And then I bought a power meter somewhere along the way. It was a tremendous shock to me when I came inside and ran my bike on a trainer with a power meter. I thought I was doing the same effort I was doing outside.
Mm-hmm.
And my power was like, why is my power 30, 40% lower than it is outside? Ooh. I mean, that's ridiculously low. When I'd go outside, I'd ride at, say, 150 watts. When I was on the trainer, I was doing like 110.
Wow. Do you think?
And it felt like a similar type of effort.
How much of that, you know, I mean, we're in a very hilly area. I guess that was just the board of being on a trainer. I'm spoiled over hills and.
Well, I mean, I also find in running that I run a lot slower on a treadmill than I do outside in general. If I just go to what feels like a comfortable pace, it's a lot slower than what a comfortable pace is running.
So a comfortable pace on a treadmill is slower than a comfortable pace on the road.
Yeah, I generally run at 10 plus on the treadmill at a nice, easy, comfortable pace. But when I go outside, I'm generally running like 9:45. 9:50. It's just interesting. Get on a treadmill and start like at something like 11-minute miles and just kind of bump up a little bit at a time. You'll find a comfortable pace. You'll find it's probably a lot lower than what it is outside.
No, you're right. My outside runs too, because I run with other people. It really depends who I'm with.
Running with, yeah.
If I'm by myself, that is correct though. I will go a whole lot faster when I'm on my own than I do outside than I do. You're right. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I can make myself go faster on the treadmill.
Well, yeah, you can always set it to the pace you want to run on a treadmill, but it feels hard.
Yeah.
It feels a lot harder than it does when you're outside doing those same paces.
Yeah.
There's something about being indoors and in that environment that makes the effort seem a lot harder than it does in the outside environment.
But I would still pick a treadmill for intervals, outside intervals, any day of the week.
The nice thing about intervals on a treadmill, especially for the really fast intervals, are guaranteed pacing. That was always the problem I had.
Yes.
Unless you're on a track, it becomes very hard to find something flat enough that you can keep an average pace that where you want it to be.
Right. I tend to fluctuate way too much, but on a treadmill, it makes me do it easier.
Like I said, I wish I had a track. That would be like the ultimate thing to have access to easily.
But can we build one out here?
We probably could.
Could build one out in my farm.
But the way schools are nowadays, you can't just go on a school track. It's like, oh my gosh, you've like invaded some sanctuary that can't be, even though there's nobody on it, like 99% of the time that a track's sitting there, you still can't go on it.
It's because people have ruined it years and destroyed it.
Some of it's that. Some of it's they just don't want you near kids anymore. Which I get, I guess, to some extent. At the same time, it's like, okay, these are all tracks that are built with public money, but we can't, like, get on.
Yeah. My hometown had the swimming pools and tennis courts and the track were right next to the high school, and they were owned by the town. So the high school used the track, but it was not theirs. It belonged to the town. I mean, that was ideal. And then they had a separate football.
Because, like, in Louisville, they have one of the parks is, like, really flat by my parents, and they have this like 1.2 mile loop, which would be perfect for that type of thing, because it's basically flat, which would be just as good as a track, probably even better than a track for some of the interval work. But we don't really have anything like that here in Frankfort.
No, game farm's pretty, but the end of it, there's a little bit of a hill. That's where I do it. It's got to be flat.
So that's one thing to keep in mind though when training, is that I can do 2 or 3 hours on a trainer, on a bike.
Shoot me. Better have a good movie.
That sounds painful. So painful. You're going to sweat a lot more than you are outside. But secondly, unless you have some type of power meter that can drive how hard you're going, it's very challenging to do as good a workout as that 3-hour workout outdoors. Now, if I try to go outside and do 3 hours on a bike in the winter, staying warm becomes a real problem.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. An hour or so on a bike, most people can tolerate whatever amount of cold that comes their way. It's when you get to that second and third hour where your feet become popsicles, biking stops being fun. I remember doing those 2 and 3 hour rides, and they just weren't fun. The last hour of those, you were just frozen, and you were just riding because I needed to get the mileage in, and it stopped being fun.
I guess what stops me almost more than the cold is the wind is so different at this time of year. It's not a nice little gentle breeze. It's like going to bite your nose off. It's so cold. The other thing, if there's any kind of ice on the road, if it's that cold, you run into those kind of hazards. It's always raining at this time of year. Ugh.
It just makes it, you end up spending a lot of time scheduling around weather.
Weather.
Exactly. Much more so in the winter than you do in the summer. And you get the same problem in the spring. When you start moving in the spring and it starts warming up, that's also the rainy time here. Once again, you're spending your time trying to schedule around rain. So if I have that race in April, May, trying to get those bike rides in on the weekend, a weekend that doesn't have rain, becomes this challenge. Trying to get a 2-3 hour bike ride. Heck, if you're an Ironman, 5-hour bike ride in April, good luck. This is the big reason why I don't schedule early season races. If I have an early season race, it's mostly just kind of for fun or just to see where I am fitness-wise. It's been a while since I've done a May race, though. It's been a really long time since I've done an April race. I've done a handful of May races.
There is that short series, or usually happens. Those are fun, but they're inside. I mean, the pool.
The pool's inside. Yeah, those become interesting.
The first one I did, I didn't get to bike because it snowed.
Yeah. Racing in the cold is a different beast. You just have to be able to suffer.
And that race, actually, that I did, it was 0 degrees Fahrenheit, or just a little bit above it.
Oh yeah, that's gosh. They usually go backwards when it gets that cold.
Yeah. Yeah, we ran first, and then we were supposed to bike.
Where the 80-degree pool feels like it's 95. That is the weirdest feeling.
It's the only
feeling.
Time my family's ever come to a triathlon. There's pictures of my kids in there.
I remember jumping in that pool, and it's like you have trouble breathing because it's so hot.
Yeah, your feet just start tingling. Like, whoa. Mm-hmm.
And when you go the other way and it's, say, 40 degrees out, man, that's wild. Because the last time I did that was, I've done that a couple times.
And they did it in the correct order?
In a try for sight. Was in September and it was 39 degrees.
Ooh.
And I remember getting on the bike. I was just in my tri-suit. We were just going. I'm going. I think I had gloves for my hands, like the cheap gloves, just to kind of keep them warm.
Oh.
And it was cold. I froze.
Wow.
Made it through the bike, made it through the run, and then I was cold for hours afterwards because the high that day was like 60. You get done and it's like freezing.
Yeah. 60 is not warm. I remember the try for sight 1 year. Like I said, it's a September race and the heater was in the pool.
Oof.
In the one of the local swim shops was there, and they had this swim skins, and they had them like half price, normally like $100, and they had them for $60. I'm like, here is my money, give me one of those, and I wore it for the entire race. It was great, and it kept me. I mean, I would have been, but no heater in that pool. Oof.
That's brutal.
That was cold.
I have done other. I've done like some halves in cold, like that April race, and I did one in September that was pretty cold, a half. Those I took more time to put on. Like a shirt.
Mm-hmm.
The transition time on a half is not nearly as pressing as it is in a shorter distance race.
Yeah.
I don't mind spending another 20, 30 seconds putting on. I think I'd usually put just like a shirt, like a cotton type shirt on just to take some of the chill off.
Yeah.
You know, I'd still go without like putting any long pants on or anything like that. And usually I get like those gardening gloves that are like super cheap, that are super loose. But those are great for a race because they don't stick when you try to get them on your hand.
When you get them on your hands, yeah.
That's the problem you have with putting on like additional clothing in a race. You're wet.
Yeah.
It becomes very challenging to put on clothing that's skin tight.
Yeah. I think it must have been that try for sight where the pool was broken, the heater was broken, that I put on a jacket for the bike. And I remember struggling getting stuck on the stuff.
But. Oh, yeah, the bike. Yeah, the jacket you put on your... parachute for your bike.
No, it was tight fitting,
okay.
Which is why I had so many problems getting it on. It was, I mean, it was a warmer layer.
Yeah, okay.
You know, it was not just for wind. Actually, no. I was glad I did. Yeah, my transition was pretty slow.
Yeah, when you race short course and it's cold, you just have to learn to suffer.
Yeah, I did. I did. That's what I did this year. I'm done.
But anyway, this was kind of like we were talking about. Well, what kind of race schedule do we have next year? And again, I hear people that want to have these early season races. And when you decide, I want to do an early season race, these are some of the things I think you need to consider before you go, hey, I'm going to pull the trigger on this April, May race. Hey, there's real challenges to the training aspects of it. And the weather may prohibit you from getting some of the really nice training that you want to get sometimes. That's the other side of it. The weather may just prohibit you from being able to get out and do anything, run. Do some of the stuff you really want to do to train well. And sometimes the indoor alternatives just aren't going to be as good. It's very challenging to make those as good as being outdoor for some of that stuff.
Agreed. Although for me, as just for straight running, I would much rather do a spring race. I don't sign up for important races for the fall because I don't like to train in the heat. Don't like to run in the heat. I'd much rather, but that's just running.
Yeah, in triathlon, you don't get a choice. You're running in the heat.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe one of these years I'll actually get acclimated. Not there yet. Didn't have to worry about
it. Didn't have to worry about much of anything this year.
No. Just have a whole lot of fun. Well, thanks. Well, everybody stay warm and stay. Don't wreck. Stay off the big wheels, Brian.
I can't promise that. I want to drift. I just want to drift.
I can see a do they make adult-sized big wheels?
That would be cool. That'd be cool. I guess I'll have to just drift on the mountain bike when I'm out mountain biking. Oh, that scares me a lot more than the big wheel.
Don't do it on the road bike. That's not fun.
Yeah, generally you don't want to do it on a road bike. It's hard to recover from a slide on a road bike. I've done it before, but it's a lot more scary. Mountain bike is a little bit, you're not going
as fast.
I did
it when I didn't really want to, just the back wheel. Like, ooh,
Oh, yeah, it's always fun when you hit the brakes and slide, too.
Yeah.
I've done that a number of times.
Yep, keeping it together. All right, well, hope the big wheel Christmas tree around. Thanks, everybody, for listening. If you're looking for a coach, go to go3sport.com. We will talk to you next week.